It's Thursday, the 19th of May, 2016. Happy birthday to Mario Chalmers, Raul Neto, and Kevin Garnett. Monster Show brought to you by Loot Crate and Mr. A. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast like Mr. A, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become said sponsor. Of course, thank you to everyone who's done that. Thank you to Mr. A. And it's not Mr. A as in the letter, it's Mr. E with an acute accent. So I'm going A? Maybe that he's from Canada, so maybe it's some sort of clever play on words that I'm unaware of. Anyway, Mr. A, thank you for sponsoring today's podcast. If you are watching this show live, which you can do with any of the shows, they are broadcast live on YouTube, and you want to interact with the show, tweet at me at redrock_bball, and also tweet at my guest, which is from Basketball Monster, Matt Smith. Matt, how are you going?
I'm doing well, Josh. How are you?
I'm okay. Here in these cold Melbourne days, getting colder by the day, unfortunately, as all you people in the States are. Things are warming up, it's starting to get cold. How's the weather over in Adelaide today?
It's been pretty nice this week. The sun's been out, funnily enough, speaking of Phoenix. But yeah, definitely is getting colder. Why have you only got the one Phoenix jersey behind you, mate? Where's all your other arrangement of Phoenix Suns jerseys?
Well, at this stage, I've only got one jersey for most teams. I've got two for a couple, but I think I'm leaving myself some scope to get some ones for next year. So when Phoenix takes their pick at pick four, I'll be looking to get that guy. Maybe a Skull Labissiere jersey, Phoenix jersey at pick number four for next year to pair up with my Eric Bledsoe. I couldn't go too hard on everyone this year. Just slowly building. Finally got every team. My Orlando Magic one came about 2 weeks ago. Complete the set. Now I just need to get a couple so I can really go hard and have one on each side. So for now, the Eric Bledsoe jersey just hangs pretty lonely there behind me.
Surely you need a Devin Booker one.
I'd go Alex Len over him. I don't hate Booker, but I'm a big Alex Len fan, and just I don't think there's many. I actually tried to get an Alex Len jersey this year. wasn't all that easy to find where I was getting my jerseys from. Didn't seem to be all that many. It wasn't many Eastern European fans. I couldn't find a Jonas Valanciunas one either, unfortunately, so I had to go with a Kyle Lowry one with Toronto, and I went with the Bledsoe one because I couldn't find my Len jersey. So you'd be going with a Booker jersey?
I haven't got one yet, but yeah, we might have to get one in the mail. Still got my old Steve Nash jersey in the closet there, but yeah, that's only for very special occasions.
Now, I don't think I've even announced what we're actually doing today. It's the Phoenix Suns Season in Review podcast. We did yesterday the Philadelphia 76ers one. We're going to be going through all teams. Today we're talking Phoenix because that is Matt's special. Matt's a genius on all NBA teams, but the Phoenix Suns, they reside closest to his heart. So he's going to help us cover off the season that was for Phoenix, talking about the players. All the players that ended the season on the roster for Phoenix, players they've got stashed in Europe, the hopes and dreams of these players heading into next season. Are they headed up? Are they headed down? What's their dynasty value like? Just a general outlook and shit-talking about the team from Arizona. Matt, it was not a good season for the Phoenix Suns. They finished the year 23-59. They fired their coach, who coincidentally, has been hired apparently by the New York Knicks today, Jeff Hornacek. He will be their coach. That completely feels like it's out of the blue for the Knicks. Oh, it has to be a triangle guy. It's going to be Rambis. No, well, it's Hornacek. So any criticisms I had of Phil Jackson, well, they're not completely gone, but that is definitely the right move. And unfortunately, Matt, I think in terms of coaching rants next season, all the bad guys are gone. Sam Mitchell's gone. Byron Scott's gone. Kurt Rambis is gone. But I have a feeling that Earl Watson might be our top of the pecking order for coaching rants next season. How do you feel about him being the steward of the team moving forward?
Yeah, well, I saw you tweet that out this afternoon, and it got me thinking this afternoon. We've had some of these, I'll give you five or six names here of coaches who have either changed teams or become available in terms of Vogel, Dave Yeager, Thibodeau, Blatt, Brooks, and Walton, and we're stuck with Earl Watson. So...
Look,
yeah.
I've got no problem with hiring assistants. I've got no problem with hiring fresh blood. Kenny Atkinson in Brooklyn, fine. No issue. But it was the process behind it, like just not interviewing anyone else. And PJ Tucker's gone, oh, I like the guy. Oh, cool. That's all we need. PJ, thanks for the advice. Earl, just sign here. And that's all apparently it needed. A 32-year-old bit part player in PJ Tucker going, I'm giving this guy 1.5 thumbs up. Cool, let's sign him. Don't worry about anything else. He's the best. PJ Tucker knows he's our coaching search coordinator. The whole process made no sense. And to someone like you as involved with Phoenix and you know, watches everything that's happening with them, it must have been a real pain in the ass to see that sort of process go ahead.
Yeah, it was strange. And Mirza Teletovic was another guy who vocally backed in Earl Watson, and Teletovic is a free agent and may not even be back there next season. So it was really strange. And even when Watson did take over, there was some strange decisions and moves and rotations that he made. I know he didn't have a full roster, and he probably was in a tough position because he almost needed to lose to get the top pick, the pick 4 that the Suns did get in the lottery the other day. So the jury's out. I'll reserve my judgment for now. I don't want to go and bag him. I want to give him a full shot with a healthy roster next year and see what he can do. But yeah, the process, as you said, definitely was a strange one.
The process is what my concern with. No problem with it. He could turn out to be great. And I talked about this plenty of times during the end of the season. Teams making evaluations on coaches for bad teams based on their win losses is ridiculous. And the fact that they said, okay, Watson, you won 9 games and lost however many, and you know, your team wasn't great, is fine. But it was the whole process that was a concern to me. And some of you, as you said, some of the stubborn rotational decisions were weird with what he was doing with the Len Chandler front court, which is not something that's going to work in the NBA moving forward. That was a little bit strange, but fine, give him a chance. It's just that bring someone else in. Bring it, interview someone else. Interview, you know, one of the many Spurs assistants. Bring Becky Hammon in for an interview. Like, bring anyone in. Bring, there's so many options rather than just like, oh, we had you here. Look, cool, thumbs up. Like, you were so great. It just didn't make any sense. But I don't want to harp too much on Earl Watson. You touched on the lottery that was yesterday, Matt. The Suns ended up with a pretty good haul. In fact, 4 picks inside the top 35, and I would have to say that's one of the best selection of picks out of everyone in the league. They've got pick 4, they've got pick 13, so 2 lottery selections. They've picked 28 as their 3rd first-round selection, and they've got pick 34. So that enables them to do a couple of things. They can either package some of these picks together for players or for moving up, or it enables them to draft Euro players and stash them. And all these teams with multiple first-rounders, Toronto, Denver, Philadelphia, Phoenix, Boston, you know, 5 teams with multiple first rounders are going to be looking heavily at the Euros, and I'm really intrigued by a lot of the Euros or international players in this draft. And I think Phoenix will be looking to draft one of those guys and potentially stash them towards the end. So you're pretty happy with them finishing with pick 4, very early days, but are you leaning any direction where you think that the Suns would look to go?
Still a little bit early. There's a couple of guys there, Dragan Bender in particular, who, yeah, from Croatia. Looks like he's got a ton of upside, really promising young player. Jaylen Brown, I think, was the other one around that mark. But then also Chris Dunn. I know there's been some talk today about maybe his management team not giving the Suns his medical information. And I know once again that there's going to be a lot of maybe backlash and scrutiny if Phoenix do go and take another point guard in the draft, considering they are. Deep in that sense, at that guard position. But that pick 4 in particular is really going to tell us which direction the Suns are going to go, not just for next year, but for the future, whether they keep Bledsoe and Knight and Chandler and build around those guys, and maybe even trade out that pick 4 to get another veteran-type player in to jump straight back into the playoffs, or whether they do go for a Bender and then build around Bender, Booker, and Len, and then maybe trade off Knight or Bledsoe or Chandler. So I think that pick 4 will really determine the direction of the team. And also, you're right around possibly packaging some of those picks, because Ryan McDonough, straight after the lottery, did say that the Suns are not likely to bring in all 3 first-round picks into training camp next year. So whether they do package them and try to move up in the draft, or, yeah, whether they do draft a European player and do stash him overseas like they've done with Bogdanovic for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Bogdanovic later on in the show as well. Let's talk about the Suns' current roster as it is constructed in terms of their upcoming free agents. You touched on Mirza Teletovic, who's an unrestricted free agent after signing that 1-year, $5.5 million deal last season. And in the end, he turned out to be a real bargain at that price. He was fantastic for the Suns. They've got PJ Tucker, who's not a free agent, but he's on an non-guaranteed deal. he'll be that's there's no issue with that. We've got John Lua, who's an unrestricted free agent. We've got Ronnie Price, who's an unrestricted free agent. We've got Chase Buttiger, who's an unrestricted free agent as well. And John Jenkins has the next 2 years of his deal non-guaranteed. So they've got definitely some flexibility with some of those guys. We're going to talk about all of them individually, but that's the way their current roster stands. No restricted free agents on the books at this stage, but four unrestricted guys, and probably the key one there, or the most important player out of that group, is Mirza Teletovic. I don't think there's much debate about that. Do you, Matt?
No, there's not, and we'll be interested to see what they do there. Ryan Anderson is a free agent, and I think they might throw a little bit of money at him. He's a player that the Suns have targeted over the last few seasons and haven't been able to get hold of. They do like that stretch four, so I think they will bring Teletovic back, on a couple of
quickly,
years.
How old do you think Teletovic is?
Go on.
How old do you think Teletovic is?
He's 30.
He is, yep, and I don't think many people realise how old he actually is. And 30, so he's past prime. Teletovic, like, yes, he's had three seasons in the NBA now, but he is starting to head on the downside. His defense was already not at a great level, and things will start to drop off. He'll lose some of the strength in his legs, on his shot. So it really depends. And the similar thing is going to be happening for Ryan Anderson as well. I think whoever gets Ryan Anderson is going to end up overpaying for him, and I'm not sure he is going to be a great target for whatever team goes after him. Let's talk Suns. Let's talk the way things went down last year. Let's start with their best player, I think their best player, Eric Bledsoe, who was turning in a pretty impressive season before he went down with another knee injury. He was a top 28 cat guy per game for the whole season. He was just outside the top 20. He's 24th in 9 category leagues for the season, which is obviously pretty impressive as well. He was great in roto. He was great in head-to-head leagues. He was looking like he was putting up, he was putting up big numbers, 20.5 points, 1.5 threes, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, over half a block, 45 and 80. Like, those numbers are tremendous numbers. But the injury is a real concern with him. He only played 31 games. What do we make of Eric Bledsoe moving forward, Matt? Is he someone that is potentially on the way out in Phoenix? Is he someone that they would get rid of to go with a Knight Booker pairing? Or is he the cornerstone of that team? And how does he recover from this injury?
I think he's the guy that the Suns will keep and build around. He wasn't one of the first guys that the Suns got in under Ryan McDonald. We traded out Jared Dudley to get Eric Bledsoe. So I know from that perspective, any inside information. I think from that perspective, Ryan would like to build around him and the team would like to build around him because he did bring him in. But, yeah, there's always going to be that injury-prone tag over Bledsoe's name, like 31 games this season, just the 43 games in 13 and 14 and the 40 games before that in 11 and 12. So every second season he seems to have a pretty significant injury, which is a concern. He's still only 26. But, as you said, when he was on the court, he was putting up career-high points, blocks, threes, and he was a top 15 fantasy player there for a while. So production's not an issue. His health is an issue, and that's going to be the concern going into next season. I'm sure you're going to be able to get him at a little bit of a discount because people might shy away from him. But if you can get Eric Bledsoe in the third round, late third, maybe early fourth, then I think you're going to have to take it and just fingers crossed that he does stay healthy.
If you get him in the third round, I think you'll be pretty happy because this injury is not the same meniscus injury he's had previously. That's correct, isn't it? I'm not misremembering that. This is not the same injury. This is not a recurrent injury. Yes, he's had a meniscus problem, but it was the other knee. And we've seen lots of guys with meniscus problems have the meniscus problem, have the surgery, and come back fine after it. And he came back fine from the first one. So I'm not concerned about him. He's got 3 more years at $14.5 million, which is an absolute bargain heading into these next couple of years. He was a tremendous player. He is going to be back. There's no risk in terms of is he going to be right for training camp. There's no concern with that for me. He went down at the start of January, and he'll be 9 months. There's plenty of time. He'll be ready to go. He'll be steaming forward. You won't have to pick him in the second round, but he will be a second round player next year. I am almost 100% convinced. And if he slips outside the top 30 or even to the 40s, it is an absolute must have to me. He was a guy I targeted heavily this year. he cost me in a few spots, but I still won leagues where I drafted him. And I think that it, next year I'll be able to slip back around and grab him and still be pretty happy. I think that in a dynasty league, this is the lowest point of his value because you know people love a narrative, Matt. They'll be, oh, he's injury prone, knee again. But they might not know the details that it's a different knee, that it's something that he has recovered from previously without any ill effects. And to me, that means low value, trough of his value. Grab him now, reap the benefits moving forward. What about Brandon Knight? He is 2 years younger than Bledsoe. He has signed for one more season. He is also going to be at a relatively bargain rate of a contract. He was not as good this year, though, as what we saw from him in Milwaukee, where he finished last season as the 55th ranked player in 9 category leagues. This year, he was 73rd, so a bit of a drop down. He was 32nd in 8 cat leagues last year. He dropped down to 38th. And he himself, to me, he's more of a concern injury-wise than what Bledsoe is. Bledsoe, to me, is a little bit like that Ricky Rubio, like has an injury, but when he has one, it is a big injury and it costs him big chunks of time. Brandon Knight, it's just little pissy little things like ankle, groin, hernia, groin, just things that keep recurring. And that to me is more of a concern. What did you think of Knight in a full season in Phoenix? And how does that make you think about him moving forward? Is he the piece that gets traded?
Yeah, I think he might be, especially, like I said before, really going to depend what they do with that pick 4. If they do go with, say, Chris Dunn and do go with the best player available at that point in the draft, then Brandon Knight, I think, might be the guy who is expendable. There was also some talk just after the season finished around Brandon Knight's role next season. Will he come off the bench? Will he start next to Eric Bledsoe? And Knight himself said that he wants that same role. He wants that starting role. So if L. Watson comes in and says, Brandon Knight, I want you as my sixth man coming off the bench, handling the ball, how well will that go down with Brandon Knight? You know, let's hope he doesn't crack the shits like Markeith Morris did. But he might be unhappy there. So, yeah, Brandon Knight is the big one in terms of, yeah, a piece that they can trade. 4 years and 58 mil still on that contract, but for a 24-year-old coming into him coming into his prime, that's still a really good contract. So, yeah, it's going to be almost a make or break season for Brandon Knight. Can he elevate his game into that next tier as a point guard shooting guard combo, or will he just become a solid backup six man type? So, like we saw with Isaiah Thomas move to Boston and just took over, had a breakout season. So Brandon Knight, he's a real iffy one.
Now, he played 36 minutes a game in his 52 games. He was almost at 20 points a game, 19.6 and 2.3 triples, 4 rebounds, 5.1 assists, 1.2 steals, 42 and 85 as his percentage splits, 34 from 3. These are all pretty solid numbers. Turned the ball over a lot. And as I mentioned, there's a bit of a disparity between his 9 cat ranks and his 8 cat ranks. But when you look at his like advanced numbers, they're really poor in terms of box score plus minus. He was a negative 0.3, meaning he's worse than an average player on an average team. His win shares per 48, and if you use just win shares, it's because he had a lot of injuries and that cut him down. So I'm going to go with a more of a rate statistic, win shares per 48. Matt, the Suns had 23 players pull on a jersey last year. Where do you reckon Knight would rank in terms of win shares per 48 minutes? So who the players who contribute the most to the wins that the Suns actually did have, not that there were many of them.
I'm going to say he's down the list there, going on just your tone of voice, and say he was 15th.
He was 13th. So, yeah, there was a couple of guys ahead of him who didn't play many games. Corey Jefferson, Jordy McRae, and Alan Williams, who combined for 25 games. But of the regulars, he was behind Bledsoe, Chandler, Teletovic, Lua, Warren, Tucker, John Jenkins, who played just the 22 games there, Ron Price, and Devin Booker. So he was behind all those guys in win shares per 48. He was ahead of Alex Len, but the guys behind him, we're talking Chase Buttinger, Chris Humphries, who played 4 games, Orlando Johnson, Archie Goodwin, Phil Pressey, Mark Heath, Sonny Weems, Lorenzo Brown and Bryce Cotton. So not a lot of talent there sitting behind him. So his advanced numbers, none of them look really great. He had a below average PER as well. His true shooting percentage was okay at 52%, but just, I don't know, there was just a bit of a drop off to me after that tremendous breakout he had in Milwaukee. So in terms of dynasty value, I'm not convinced that he actually gets back to Milwaukee value. I'm more concerned with his injuries than I am with Bledsoe's injuries. And to me, he's a guy that I don't think I'd be touching anywhere near the top 50 next season, just with uncertainty, because, as you said, if someone's getting pushed out, it's more likely him than Bledsoe. And you know, I just don't know what the league holds for him in the next couple of seasons. The next player we'll talk about is PJ Tucker, and an interesting player. He started off the season, I think it's fair to say, horrifically. He was dreadful. He could do nothing right. He's a much better 9-cat player. End of the season is 123rd ranked, 129th in 8-cat. And his post and pre-All-Star splits were a big difference. 137 pre, 108 post. So it's a bit of a jump there. But this is way down on what he was last year, where he was the 83rd ranked player. I think the thing that saved him from having to have some fantasy relevance is obviously the injury to TJ Warren and the injury to Eric Bledsoe when the Suns were struggling to put out any wing-type players. PJ Tucker is not young. He is not spectacular. He's 31 years old. As I said, he's got a non-guaranteed deal. The chances the Suns bring in a small forward in the draft is relatively high, plus the return of TJ Warren. This is almost as big a down arrow as you can have, I think, with PJ Tucker. How do you see it?
Yeah, I agree. This will be his final year in that contract as well, $5.3 million. So he could be one who does also get moved next season. There's been some talk in the past around the Suns trading PJ Tucker because of TJ Warren now coming in behind him. And being fit and healthy, I think TJ Warren can really challenge for that starting small forward role. And I hope he does. It's about time that TJ Warren, or whether they do go with a Jaylen Brown in the draft or someone like that, or bring in another small forward, Bogdan Bogdanovic, who we'll speak about as well. He could always play that small forward role. So the Suns do have a few guys coming through. So Jeff Hornacek did love PJ Tucker's defense. We'll see what Earl Watson does with him. But in terms of dynasty value, it's very low. In terms of even redraft value next year, I can't see him being a top 100, top 120 player. He'll just be one of these guys who'll be able to pick up off the waiver wire, stream through, get his 5-6 rebounds, a couple of steals and a three, and just help you there as a streaming option.
Well, that's the benefit that he does have. He's a great rebounder for a shooting guard. He averaged 6.2 boards per game last year, 0.8 threes, 1.3 steals. That's where the bulk of his value is. But subpar percentages, 41 and 75 aren't great, only 33 from three, and averaged just 8 points per game. So his traditional box score numbers, his fantasy stat numbers, they're not great. Like, his numbers are okay for the end of your bench guy, and as you said, move in and out of lineups as per last season. The low turnovers really help as well. But if you look at his advanced stats, and I think looking at advanced stats is helpful to know, okay, this guy doesn't put up much numbers or big numbers in a fantasy realm, but the fact that he does other things well keeps him in a role, and his numbers last year were great. He led the Suns in defensive win shares. He led the team in defensive win shares. He was third on the team in overall win shares. He led the team in defensive box score plus minus. He was third in the team in overall box score plus minus. He led the team in VORP, value over replacement player. So he had a ton of value for this team in all those defensive sort of metrics. But at the age, the advanced age, and with TJ Warren coming in, and a potential another one or two wings joining the team, we're going to have a question about him a little bit later on. I think his dynasty value is really, really on the way down, and there's almost zero chance you're drafting him in a standard league next year. I just can't see how you could justify it. It's very early, but to me, there is. He just, even at his best, barely cracks a top 90 guy, and it's not going to stay that way for very long, I wouldn't have thought. Your mate...
And the overarching factor we've got here as well is, we should have mentioned this when we're discussing coaches, but we don't know what Earl Watson is going to do, because come the end of the season just gone, he didn't have that full complement of roster. So we don't know whether he's going to start Bledsoe and Knight next to each other. We don't know if he's going to start Chandler or Lane. We don't know whether he prefers Tucker or Warren, whether he's playing a defensive style of basketball, an offensive style of basketball. We don't know all these things yet. So it's even more difficult to predict this Phoenix Suns team and how they're going to play and the values of all these players.
Yep, exactly. We don't know what's going to happen with that Warren Tucker dynamic. There's so much to be decided. But I think it's fair to say that Tucker is not going to get much better than what we saw this year. I think that's almost a guarantee at this point. Now, your mate Tyson Chandler signed for a big contract in the off-season. in hindsight, doesn't look like the greatest deal. We understand the reasons why it was done, but he's signed for the next 3 years for almost $40 million combined. That is not an ideal way to use your cap space. We know he was signed to try and encourage LaMarcus Aldridge to join. Didn't go down. He's 33 years old. He's going to be 36 by the time this contract ends. That is extraordinarily ugly for this team. And he was really bad for big stretches of the year, Chandler, in terms of his fantasy value. Well, he wasn't ownable for most of the year. Post-All-Star break, yes, you had to look at him. But a 9-cat ranking of 163, an 8-cat rank of 156, These are not good values. You look at his punting, 8-2 rank of 136. These are not good numbers. He did improve significantly, and he was a top 100 8-cat guy after the All-Star break, but he just wasn't good for big stretches and also battled injuries, and he's 33 years old. He averaged 7.2 points and 8.7 rebounds. He saw his field goal percentage drop dramatically at the start of the year, got it back up to 58, didn't end up blocking a shot per game. His free throws dipped. You'd have to think that Alex Len would have priority to start over him. But that's not necessarily the case. Earl Watson didn't show a huge amount of love for Alex Len at the start of the year. He started him out of necessity. He started him out of position, out of necessity. And at the end of the year was dragging him a lot. And, you know, oh, he's playing power 40, shots aren't hitting. Let's put him down to 27 minutes. Well, that's not his position. And he's still giving Chandler that run. So it does worry me in terms of Len's future value. But for Chandler, can he be better than this year? It was just a really poor year, but big men at 33 don't normally get better, do they?
They don't, and he's going to be 34 by the time the season starts as well. So I do really hope that Alex Len is the starting centre, and not just the starting centre, but Earl Watson says going into training camp, right, Alex, you're my starting centre, and finally someone gives him the confidence that he needs to go out there and start and dominate. And as you said, they signed Chandler with hope to get Aldridge. That didn't turn out. Now it's a bad contract. But I hope the biggest thing that does come from Tyson Chandler being in Phoenix is he just teaches Alex Len every single thing he knows and makes him the best player possible and passes on all that knowledge. And Alex Len doesn't have to be an elite dominant center in the league. As long as he plays his role, gets his rebounds, his blocks, and becomes like a Jonas Valanciunas type role player who can help his team get into the playoffs and deep into the playoffs. You know, with guys like with Bledsoe and Booker down the track, that's what Tyson Chandler now needs to do. He also needs to not just pass on his experience to Alex Len, but all of these young guys coming through, show them what it means to be an NBA veteran and get to the highest level and win a championship. So his value comes from being that locker room guy now as much as anything.
Yeah, now we talk about PJ Tucker and how the advanced numbers looked for him. They looked pretty good for Chandler as well. He led the team in win shares. He was in terms of defensive win shares. He was third behind Len and Tucker defensive box score plus minus. He was second behind PJ Tucker in that metric as well. In box score plus minus, he was not quite as good in that metric, but he was right up there and put in some pretty decent numbers. Not quite as good as the numbers that PJ Tucker put in, which is saying something on this team anyway. But he did look okay towards the end of the year. But I think I'm with you. There has to be Len. They have to develop Len. Like, they're not going anywhere, you know, with a 34-year-old center in Tyson Chandler, who's already shown pretty big decline last season. And to me, in terms of his fantasy value, he's not going to be a standard league target, I wouldn't have thought. And obviously in dynasty leagues, you're not expecting any sort of bounce back from him. Or any sort of, you know, anything. Even if he holds at the same level, you have to consider that a massive win, because I just don't see where it goes from here with him. Devin Booker. Now, you're probably going to want to have a big spiel about with one of your boyfriends here. Devin Booker was great last season. He took a while to get going, but once he did, and the injury to Eric Bledsoe opened up playing time, he played a huge amount of minutes and put together some pretty nice numbers. But, Matt, they didn't translate into tremendous fantasy numbers. He was the 203rd ranked player in 9-cat leagues. He was 157th in 8-cat. But when we look to the post-All-Star splits, it's a bit better. 182 and 105 for 8-cat. His punting value post-All-Star was 85th as well. So pretty good in that respect. But the thing about Booker to me, what did he average? 14 points, 1.3 triples, 0.6 steals, 2.6 assists on 42 and 84%. Is what happens to him with Bledsoe and with Knight back. Now, we've talked about trades for both of these guys that could potentially happen, but if they don't, is he going to be able to log 34 minutes a night like he was doing for big chunks of last season?
Probably not 34 minutes a night, but if he can get somewhere between sort of 28 and 30, I think that would be a pretty good output for Booker. What he's going to have to do, well, I think Bledsoe and Knight coming back will get him easier shots. He was the number one offensive option come the end of the season when he was out there pretty much by himself with no one else. So Bledsoe and Knight will take a bit of that offensive pressure away from him. And it'll also open up the court more. So we know Bledsoe and Knight do like to drive and get in the lane and hopefully spread the court for Booker to do his work. I think that will also cut down his turnovers as well, because at times we saw Devin Booker almost playing a point guard role and playing pick and roll with Tyson Chandler and Alex Len and really trying to develop his passing skills. So I think having those guys back will, yeah, like I said, not only help his threes and his field goal percentage, but lessen the turnovers. But where, in terms of his fantasy value, being 15, 16 points and 2 3-pointers a game isn't enough. He's either going to need to hand out 3 or 4 or 5 assists, get 4 or 5 rebounds, or get a steal and a half a game. So he's going to have to add something else in terms of his fantasy value to really increase that. And I think you and I both agree that he will go overdrafted next year, possibly in the 70s and 80s, which I think at this stage anyway, talking 4 months out from draft time, will be too early. I'd like to get him closer to around 100, but he is going to be a player who does come with a lot of hype.
Now, the way that I sort of judge him at this stage, he reminds me very much of, from a fantasy sort of tracking point of view, as a Jordan Clarkson from his rookie season, where he had that tremendous stretch when everyone was injured in Los Angeles, and he started and he played big minutes and he was a top 40 sort of player, top 50 player, and people were like, oh, this is Jordan Clarkson's big year, let's draft him early, he might be a top 50 guy. And then you had to go, well, no, hang on, because Russell's going to be back, Kobe's going to be back, Lou Williams is brought in, and Clarkson struggled to even be a top 100 player. And Booker looked great playing 40 minutes a night, and look, he's 18, look how great he's been, and that is all true. He put up big numbers and looked impressive and looks to have an impressive career heading forward. But his second season with Knight and Bledsoe assumingly healthy, he won't play 40 minutes a night, he won't play 35 minutes a night, he will be in that 28 to 30 range. He handed out 2.6 assists, but he's not going to be the primary ball handler. He's not going to be the secondary ball handler. He's probably going to be the tertiary ball handler at best on this team. So you said he needs to get to 3.5 assists. I think he's more likely to go down from 2.6 down to, say, 2.1 or 2 rather than go up, because he's going to have, instead of Knight there to share the ball, or not even Knight there, and Ronnie Price is the other guy, he'll have Knight and Bledsoe, who combine to average over 11 assists combined between them. And they'll have the ball more in their hands, and he won't. So he's got to start looking. I mean, he came in with a reputation of a three-point marksman. He hit 34% of his threes. That's not good enough. He was getting his shots not from three. He was not hitting his shots from three, and he will go overdrafted next year. Now, if we're going to switch to Dynasty, it's a different story. Where do you see his overall upside? Because, you know, in 3 or 4 years, there's no way that Bledsoe and Knight are both going to be on this team.
No, there's not. And I didn't say he was going to get 3 or 3.5 assists. I said he needed to do something else apart from three to boost his value. And that ties in with his dynasty value. What can he be in 4 or 5 years' time? Can he be a Bradley Beal type player, but healthy? There's been a lot of comparisons to Klay Thompson. If he can get to that would be amazing. But if he can be an 18-point scorer, 4 or 5 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, 2 threes. His free throw percentage is already at 84, which is good. That field goal percentage will need to come up into 44, 45 range. He could be top 40, top 50 sort of guy. But right now probably isn't the best time to buy Booker. You're not going to buy low because of the hype that's coming off of his rookie season. So you might need to wait for an injury or for a down patch, or when Bledsoe and Knight do get back on the court and they're healthy and they're dominating and Booker's taking the back seat, then's the time to throw out these offers to the Devin Booker owner.
Absolutely. Now, he put together a PER of 11.9, which is not good. He had the second worst defensive box score plus minus on the entire team, just better than Mirza Teletovic. So in terms of comparisons to Klay Thompson, like he's not as big as Klay Thompson. He's not the defender that Klay Thompson is. He's a pretty good true shooting percentage at 53.5. That's decent numbers. But his advanced metrics weren't great. He took a lot of minutes to do what he did towards the end of the year. And you're right, that hype is going to be way too high. So acquiring him now is silly. You wait a month. You wait a month or two where he's playing 28 minutes a night, and he's seen drops in numerous categories, like we'd say, very similar to Jordan Clarkson this year, who's now primed for a much bigger season next year with Kobe out of there. Booker will get that happening, maybe trade deadline, maybe the season after, but to me, next season, he is going to go way too high, because for as good as what he did and as exciting as what he was and the compliments that he got from players, it didn't translate into fantasy numbers, and there's a big chance that it does get worse before it gets better. And I think we've both articulated that. Teletovic, it's fair to say that he carried this team down the stretch. Would you say that he was almost the team's best player for the last month or so?
Pretty much. That's how grim it was. He was averaging over 20 points a game there for a while, hitting 3 and 4 triples a game. With Booker was the offense. Like we said, free agent. I do think the Suns will look to bring him back.
I do too.
Not only because he fits the Suns' style in terms of that stretch four and spreads the floor, but gives them that little bit of experience as well. And even though he's 30 that season before when he was with Brooklyn and he had the heart condition, so sat out. Was it half a season or a fair chunk of the season anyway?
Yeah, about half a season.
What was it?
I think it was about half a season.
Half a season. So, still only 3 years experience in the NBA. So he's young in terms of the NBA experience, but being 30 and being around for a long time, he does have some basketball experience. So I will think they bring him back. The Suns don't actually have a power forward on the roster right now, so they do need some depth there, regardless of whether they get one in the draft or via free agency.
Yeah, so look, his last 2 months of the year, he averaged 19.3 points and 2.8 triples, 6 rebounds. He blocked 0.2 shots. So as a power forward, you're obviously not getting that from him. His field goal percentage was 45%. You're not getting that from him either. But what he does well. He scores. He hits threes. I think it's folly to expect him to repeat 19 points and 3 triples a game over a course of a whole season with other players back. So the rankings that we saw, and he put together some nice numbers. He was ranked 72nd, 93rd post All-Star break in 8 cat leagues, 98th in 9 cat leagues. He was putting together some nice numbers, and he was a must own for big stretches there. But like with a lot of these bad teams, when their good players come back and when Bledsoe returns and when Knight's fully healthy and TJ Warren's there and draft picks come in, I think it's going to be hard to think that Teletovic is going to repeat this sort of performance. This could possibly be his best season in the NBA throughout his career, and that's fine. He's a real useful sixth man type, and in fact I would probably prefer to have him over a Ryan Anderson. Their defense is both equally deplorable, but I think you get Teletovic at significantly cheaper cost than you would Ryan Anderson, and I think he can fill almost the same sort of role. So he's going to have a good role, but for fantasy, he doesn't do a massive amount, and he needs to be featured more to get that sort of number. So in a dynasty league, it's a sell high time for Teletovic if you can, I think.
Yeah, for sure, and I think we discussed this previously that Phoenix is his best destination in terms of fantasy value. If he goes to, I don't know, just pick any other team, any of the other 29 teams, and his fantasy value is likely to drop. Or the only probably one is like a Houston Rockets if they're coached by D'Antoni or someone who's just playing completely stupid in terms of pace offensively. But in terms of his value, I think, it will be at its highest point if he does return to Phoenix.
I'll tell you where he'd be a nice guy to fit is Minnesota. I'd like him there because obviously they've got Gorgui Dieng as the power forward, but they need shooting. Wiggins isn't a shooter. Dieng's not a real shooter. Zach LaVine was hot down the stretch, but you could put him in to play that backup four role and play 27 minutes a night as a shooter next to Towns. I think he'd fit really well up in Minnesota if the he wants to go that direction. But his defense is so poor, so maybe Thibodeau wouldn't be too keen. We look at his box score plus minus. He was an offensive 2.3 and a defensive negative 2.8. Now, 2.3 on itself is a really good number. And then a negative 2.8 on top of that from defense shows you just how bad he was defensively. As I mentioned, he was the worst defensive player on this team by using that metric. So obviously a real sieve at that end, but makes up for it defensive-wise. But I think probably a surprising season from him. We didn't expect that sort of a breakout. It took a while to come, and coming back from the blood clots is obviously a serious issue. Because Chris Bosh, we might never see him again, is what the all the talk around town is at the moment. But Teletovic came back strong and looked good, and looks to have a few more successful years in the NBA. TJ Warren, Matt, a lot of preseason hype for him. I wasn't quite buying it because A, he wasn't starting, and B, I thought his fantasy game was pretty limited in what he is able to do. He's a guy that didn't show any ability to hit a three-pointer at all in his rookie season. I think he hit two or three in his rookie season. He scored. He did that at a high percentage. He did nothing else. Didn't rebound, he didn't pass, he didn't get steals, he didn't block shots, he didn't hit threes, he did nothing. But he showed a tremendous ability to improve. He went to 0.6 triples a game in just 22 minutes, which is impressive. 11 points. He got 0.8 steals, which is something I wasn't expecting from him. And he was a 50% shooter from the field. I think that Warren's ability to go from year one to year two and increase his defensive ability, his steal numbers, and his ability to hit threes while still maintaining that ridiculous cutting ability and high field goal percentage shows me that he's got a tremendous caliber for growth in this league, and I'm really excited to see what he brings next season. Obviously, that broken foot was not a great situation, but it's big. Small men and broken feet is not the same issue as big men and broken feet, so I'm not all that concerned about that moving forward. But I'm thinking that he has got a real chance to be a top 100 player next season. Matt's dropped out. Are you there, Matt?
Yeah, got you.
Yep, I didn't hear any of your rebuttal there.
Sorry, I was just going to say that the key word you did mention there was limited. In terms of his points and his field goal percentage, currently at 51% for his career. He just, like Booker, he's going to have to do something else, whether that becomes a 5 or 6 rebound guy from a small forward, whether he can get up to 1 to 1.2 steals per game. He's only hit 33 threes in 330 games, so that's not going to cut it either. So can he expand his range? He can hit a three, but it's not his bread and butter. He's a in and around the basket, out the 15-foot sort of guy, slasher. So his game is promising, but yeah, he still has a lot of work to do, and probably once again, if he does get that starting role, he'll have a bit of hype and momentum around him coming into draft time, like fantasy draft time, that is, at the start of next season, and people will get on that bandwagon. But you just need to keep in mind that his game right now is quite limited to a few key areas.
Yeah, the thing that I really liked is the fact that he did increase those threes so much. Last year, per 36 minutes, he was at 0.3 triples a game. This year, he was at 0.9. So tripling your triple output is pretty impressive to me. His steals, the rate was about the same, but he still got a lot of steals in bunches, which is not something he did to a tremendous degree last season. And still keeping that field goal percentage up high is impressive. Now, he shot 40% from three. I'm not sure if that is sustainable. He did it across 47 games. That's a decent sample size, but you'd want to see him do it over at least a season and a half, to say this guy's a 40% three-point shooter, which I don't think that he is. But I think that overall, his ceiling is probably... I said he could be a top 100 player, but I think that his ceiling is probably top 85. I don't think he ever becomes a top 50, a top 40 type of player. I think he can become better, and he can become a guy who scores 18 points a game with almost a three and a steal a game, but and high field goal percentage. But what else is he doing? Is he doing enough to really jump into that upper echelon? And I'm not sure I can really see that happening from him. So he could be in that Devin Booker mold of a little bit of hype that pushes his value too high, especially in an off-season dynasty trade market. But if his owner is worried or doesn't necessarily see the growth between year one and year two, or the injury has soured them on him, I think he's a decent guy to get, providing you're getting it at a pretty good price. But I think we'll see, and he's heading into that all-important third year. I think we see a lot more out of TJ Warren in year three. And the fact that he added those two elements to his game means that I've got maybe a bit of hope. Maybe he adds a little bit of passing. Maybe he goes from one assist a game to 2.5 assists a game, which is not crazy. Maybe he takes his threes to another level and has been really working on that. And I think that he does have the scope to that because he seems like a pretty hard worker to me. Who we got next? John Lua. I don't rate this guy at all. He finished the season 167th in 9-cat leagues, 182 in 8-cat leagues. But it doesn't tell the full story because there were stretches where he was absolutely must-own. But most of that was under Jeff Hornacek. Earl Watson appeared to hate him and did not play him barely at all, except when he was literally forced to because everybody else was out injured. Lua was much, much worse post-All-Star, much worse under Watson than what he was under Hornacek. He was on a real cheap contract, $1 million, but he's an unrestricted free agent. Has he made himself some money? Yeah, he probably catches on somewhere as a $2-4 million guy for a couple of seasons. But will he be that guy that, oh, we've got to go and add John Lua ever again? I don't think so. How do you view him?
Yeah, well, he went from 26 minutes in December down to 18 in January, 13 in February, and 15.6 in March. So, as you said, once Earl Watson took over, his playing time decreased. Being a free agent, I'd be pretty surprised if he does return as a Phoenix Sun next season. And in terms of his fantasy value, there's not a lot there to talk about.
Yeah, I don't... Look, he's 26 years old as well. I don't think many people realise that he's been around for a while. His advanced numbers were pretty good. He was fourth on the team in win shares. He had a pretty decent defensive box score plus minus. He had 0.3, which is not saying a huge amount, but it's not terrible. He was sort of in that upper area on the team. He finished eighth in box score plus minus in general. But to me, he's just very blah. And when Watson was just showing clear distaste for using him, I just don't see Lua coming back. Or if he does, he's coming back in a role that's going to be really important in anything outside a league that goes 350 players deep, would be my guess. I just can't see him being someone who is even a top 200 guy next year. Alex Len. I really like Alex Len. I think that Alex Len has got tremendous ability. I think he was horribly miscast by Earl Watson. I think he was horribly misused by Jeff Hornacek. But playing him away from the rim really made him look like he doesn't know what he's doing. His block rate dropped tremendously. His field goal percentage was absolutely abysmal. But that feels like a one-year anomaly to me. And that really affected his like advanced numbers offensively. He had a horrific offensive box score plus minus of negative 4.4, which is obviously terrible. He had a negative win shares offensively, but he can actually be a guy who contributes offensively. I think that Alex Len, who was that guy, everyone grabbed him after the trades that went down, and then everyone slowly went, this guy is killing me. I can't hold on to him. What's your take now? To me, this was not Alex Len last season. This was not the Alex Len that we'll see moving forward.
Well, he's 7'1", yep. 260 pounds, and got 42% from the field. How does that work?
I'll tell you how it works. It's because you keep talking, because I want to find something that I found a stat about him. You keep talking about what you think. Where does he fit? Is he a top 100 player next year?
I think he is. Like I said before, I really hope that Alex Len starts from training camp, starts in preseason, starts from the regular season, and really gets some momentum and confidence behind him and show what he can do. He was fifth pick in the 2013 draft, coming into his third year, coming into his fourth year now, sorry. So this is the time where, yeah, he really needs to show that he can score 14 points, grab 10 rebounds a game, block a couple of shots, and put those injuries behind him as well. He has had some not significant injuries, but some key injuries that have meant he's spent time off the court, which hasn't helped his development. So once again, with another off season, a bit more coaching from Tyson Chandler, let's hope Earl Watson can use him in the right way. And yeah, he can be. I don't know if I'd draft him inside the top 100, but yeah, I think he'll definitely finish there.
I don't even think you'll have to draft him in the top 100, but I think it's a pretty safe bet to think that he does finish there. His field goal distribution this season, last year he shot at the rim, he shot 54% of his shots at the rim. Yep, that's pretty good. This year he shot 44%. 10% drop off of the amount of shots he actually took within 3 feet. That's a big drop off. So therefore, his shots between 3 and 10 feet, they went up by 6%. His shots between from outside, from 10 feet outside to the 3-point line, they went up from 27% up to 31%. So a big jump there as well. So he started taking these mid-range shots and didn't hit them. Look, he hit them at basically the same rate that he hit them last year. It's just the fact that he took them at such a higher rate. Now, his percentage converting at the rim also fell from 68 to 57%. So that's a little bit of a concern. But he takes 10 extra shots at the rim. Or sorry, 10% of those shots where he moved out, if he takes them closer to the rim, his field goal percentage doesn't look as horrific as what it did. And I think that also the fact that he was playing away from the rim so they could accommodate Tyson Chandler closer, it caused him to drop those block numbers. Now, he only averaged 0.8 blocks per game, and that's horrible. He is a 1.5 to 1.8 type blocks per game player, but he was out of position. He still grabbed 7.6 rebounds a game, 9 points, but that 42% from the field, it should be closer to 48, and he's a pretty good free throw shooter. So I think that his arrow is definitely pointing up, and if people grabbed him or people owned him and really taking upon what happened for him in March and April and think this is Alex Len, oh, a big man that shoots 42% and doesn't block shots, trash. Well, you take that to your advantage and go, oh, cool. I'll take Len off your hands. I'll relieve you of him, because once he moves back closer to the rim, on both ends of the court, I think those numbers come up tremendously. That's just a guess though, but that's the way that I see it happening. And you're right, the injuries have robbed him of a lot of development time. And he was pretty healthy last season. He didn't he played 78 games, which is clearly the best return for him in his NBA career. And is he extension eligible heading into next season? He is, I think.
That's a good question. It is.
Next season's the last year of his one more year of his rookie contract. So he's heading into that fourth season, which is when a lot of players really start to take a step up. So really looking forward to a big one from Len. So again, it's all about, in dynasty leagues especially, it's gauging the market. Hey, what do you think, Alex Len? What do you want to offer? And remember, there's negative thoughts floating around Len based on the way he finished the season. Cool, I'll have him. And I think you can get some value, because he could, at his peak, he could be a top 60 player. Think Marcin Gortat, but better. I think that's probably a fair comparison. You know, Tyson Chandler at his peak, I think he'd be better than Tyson Chandler for fantasy at his peak. I think he's got more ability to do things. Now, Chandler was good at what he did, but he didn't have a broad range of skills. I think Len can do more than that. So I think that you can get yourself... better defender than Valanciunas, not as good offensively, but I think Valanciunas has still got a higher upside than what Len does, but yeah. I think Valanciunas can be a top 35 player. I think that he can be really good, but Len is probably a round or two below that at his peak, I think. But yeah, I think he's definitely a top 50 guy at some point in the next two seasons, assuming he stays healthy, which is not always something that we should be assuming. Ron Price, couldn't believe he played at all last season for the Lakers, but here he is bobbing up again, playing meaningful minutes for a Phoenix Suns team down the stretch, and it actually wasn't horrible this year. He's a really pesky defender. He gets a lot of steals, which helps for fantasy, but he's an unrestricted free agent. He's 32 years old. If we see him on a roster next season contributing, I'll be stunned. What about you?
Yeah, Graham, while he was getting minutes over Archie Goodwin there throughout the season and towards the end of the season, has me absolutely flabbergasted. Archie Goodwin still does have another year in that contract as well. So, I can't see any reason why Ronnie Price would return.
Let's move on to Archie Goodwin, who had that stretch where they were trying to make him into a point guard when every other point guard was injured. Price, Bledsoe, and Knight were all out, and they were playing Goodwin at the point. His fantasy numbers look horrible on the surface. He ranked 390th in 9 category leagues. And this is for a guy who legitimately, Matt, was a must-own player for a stretch in January and February. He was a guy that you had to own. But he ranked 390th for the season. It is horrifically bad. It's an improvement where he ranked 410th last year, so he has not had a good run of it. He was 322nd in 8 cat leagues, but he still is really intriguing. He's super long, but I think the biggest thing holding him back as a guard is he cannot hit threes. And he has been horribly bad at that throughout his career. He was a 23% shooter this year. He was at 8.9 points. He's 42% overall from the field. A little bit of defense, but really overall not good on defense. Is there? Look, he's only 21. He is super young. There are going to be players drafted who are older than Archie Goodwin, and he has played three NBA seasons. Can he turn it around?
Well, that's what I was going to say. He's still only 21, so there still is upside there. His best month came in February, where he averaged 32 minutes a game, 15 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, and that was it. So, yeah, 0.2 steals, 0.8 of a 3 at 26% from behind the line. So his field goal percentage, 3-point range, needs a lot of work. That jump shot needs a lot of work, but he's quick. As you said, he's long. Can get to the rim, 21 years of age, still does have that upside, but coming into his final season of that contract, yeah, it's going to be a big year for Archie Goodwin, and where he goes after that, and how much do the Suns trust him. If they move Brandon Knight, do they give Archie Goodwin the keys to the second unit? Do they bring in Chris Dunn or another point guard, combo guard, with pick 4 or with pick 13? Do they find one in free agency? Now, so,
advanced numbers hate him. He was the worst out of the 23 players who pulled the jersey on for the Suns. He was the worst in VORP. Out of the players who played at least 1,000 minutes for the Suns, he was the worst in box score plus minus. Out of players who played at least 1,000 minutes for the Suns, he was the worst in win shares. Out of players who played 1,000 minutes, he was worse in win shares per 48. So nothing really stands out to him in terms of his stats. We talked about, yeah, he had that little run, but nothing was good. But you still see, you read Suns blogs, you read Suns sites, and they still think that there's something to come here. But it was clear that Earl Watson said he's not a point guard. Yeah, we're going to run Ronnie Price at there at 32 years old with a bung toe over him. And Watson made it plain to see Goodwin is not going to play point guard. We had to run him out there. He must have hated what he saw, and he said he's just not going to play point guard. And as you said, even in a season that's lost and you're trying to develop guys, he wouldn't play him over Price, which I think was a mistake, as you said. But they don't want him running point guard. So that, again, if he was able to, just through sheer force get 3 or 4 assists a game, that would make him valuable. But he just doesn't do anywhere near enough, despite all the obvious physical tools and crazy dunks that he'll throw down. You go, Jesus, what just happened? Who was that? Archie Goodwin? Wow, what's going on? And then he can't shoot, and then he doesn't defend, and then he can't pass, and he can't dribble, and just everything just seems to go wrong for this guy. Massive season coming up for him. He is if you're in a really deep league, he is definitely someone that you could gamble on for really cheap and go, you know what, maybe it turns on, maybe it clicks, maybe these guys get traded and he's forced into a bigger role. But everything is definitely pointing against him at this point. The other three players on this team, there's not much really need to talk about here. Chase Budinger, plop, like, what did he do? Was he anything? He's lost about 5 steps this year, it felt like.
Yeah, out of contract as well, 27. And yeah, if the Suns do bring over Bogdanovic, then yeah, I think that'll end any hope that Chase Budinger has of returning to Phoenix.
John Jenkins, who was waived by the Mavericks, claimed by the Suns, he's on a pretty cheap contract, just $1 million a year for the next 2 years. He was decent at times. He had a really good preseason in Dallas, and then did absolutely nothing when the regular season rolled around. Do the Suns hang on to him? Does he have a role? Is he someone who could be taking minutes off Archie Goodwin because at least he can actually shoot?
Well, they signed him with, what, probably 6 or 8 weeks left in the season, maybe even less. They hardly used him.
Yeah, he played 22 games for the Suns, 280 minutes only. So, 10, 12 minutes a game, like, not much.
So, yeah, it was really strange. Like you said, he had a massive, massive preseason. And then it looked like Dallas were looking for guards and then refused to play him. The Suns signed him, refused to play him. And, yeah, he's 25 years of age now, so it's not as if he is Archie Goodwin and he's 21 and he's still got that upside in terms of development. He should be coming into his prime as an NBA player. So, The Suns may keep him around that those two years aren't fully guaranteed, so they could cut him or waive him. But once again, I think it's going to really depend what the Suns can do via the draft and free agency.
We've got one more player to talk about. Before we do that, Matt, today's show was brought to you by Loot Crate. And if you're unaware, Matt, Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and you get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items and more. This month's theme, which is power, it's almost over until 9 p.m. Pacific on the 19th, which is probably the day you listen to this podcast. That crate is done, and that's including things, 2 Marvel items, some Warcraft stuff, Dragon Ball Z, kitchen items, t-shirts, pins, something you can carry. But after 9 p.m. Pacific on the 19th, it is done. You cannot get this crate anymore. If you want to check out what Loot Crate's got, head to lootcrate.com/redrock, and if you use that unique URL, then you can also use the coupon code, which is REDROCK2, and that saves you $3 off any new subscription, whether it's for yourself, for your friends, for your kids, for your parents, for your brothers, for your niece, for your aunties, for your favorite fantasy basketball podcasters in Australia. Anyone, use that coupon code REDROCK and save $3 off any new subscription. So check out lootcrate.com/REDROCK, and it helps them know that you guys listening to this podcast are supporting the show as well. Matt, one player left. Alan Williams, who signed some 10-day contracts at the end of the season. I would have to say that I was marginally impressed by what I saw from him in the short time that he played. But he was a guy who stood out in Summer League for the Rockets, didn't catch on during the season, but ended up in Phoenix and had really small sample size, but had some really nice defensive numbers. He averaged half a block in just 6.8 minutes per game, which obviously if you expand that out to a bigger role, it's pretty significant as a rim protector. Anything though with Williams to make you think they'd bring him back as a third center?
Probably unlikely. I think he's undersized at 6'8".
Yep.
Needs to be a couple of inches taller. He did have that big game to end the season, 14 points, 12 rebounds and 3 blocks against the Clippers, but I think it's highly unlikely the Suns bring him back.
I do agree with that, but he did show some flashes, so he's not a complete lost cause. Now, one player that we've mentioned in passing throughout the show is Bogdan Bogdanović, not to be confused with Bojan Bogdanović in the Brooklyn Nets system, who's playing in Brooklyn. Bogdan Bogdanović was a first-round pick of the Suns a couple of years back, I think with the 27th or 28th pick, and that's something that they'll look to do again this year, I think, with one of those late picks, his draft a Euro guy. He's playing in Turkey at Fenerbahce in Istanbul. He's played 28 games so far this season in the Euro League. He's averaging almost 12 points a game, over a steal a game, 3 assists, 3.3 rebounds. He's shooting his free throws at 80%. He's hitting 37% of his threes. He's hitting 1.8 of those per game. He's looking pretty decent. He is a wing player. He's, how big is he? 6'7", 6'8"? Is that about right?
Yes, 6'6".
6'6", so he's a pretty decent-sized guy. He's not a horrible defender. We were talking before we went on air here that we haven't heard anything official as to whether he's coming over, but I think if we both had to lean one way, we would say yes, but it's probably, to me, a 60-40 that he comes over. What you've probably been keeping closer tabs on Bogdanović this season than what I have. What's your take on him?
Yeah, I really like him. He's won the EuroLeague Rising Star the last couple of seasons as well. Only the second player to do that behind Nikola Mirotic, I believe. So,
correct.
As you said, 6'6", 200 pounds, really good size, can shoot the three, can dunk, got a lot of tools. Still only 23 years of age, will be 24 while the season starts. And I really hope the Suns do get him over and can start his NBA career. And it's a good time now as well with some of these other guys, like hopefully getting Ronnie Price and John Jenkins out the way. And then, whether Bogdanović can come and play sort of a small forward role or just back up Bledsoe and Knight off the bench at shooting guard. So in terms of dynasty value, he's definitely one to consider. Might be floating around on a waiver wire somewhere as he's stashed in Europe, or he might be coming into a rookie draft or wherever your league is set up. But he's definitely one to keep an eye on, write his name down in your little black book, and yeah, keep an eye on and an ear out for Bogdan Bogdanovic over this offseason.
He can handle the ball as well. He's averaged 3 assists per game this year, 2.8 last year, 3.7 the year before. And as a guy who can play the 2 or the 3, he might play the 3 in Phoenix, and further marginalizing PJ Tucker, so have a TJ Warren, Bogdan Bogdanovic small forward position, and if they bring in a rookie there as well, he could play the 3 alongside Booker, alongside Bledsoe as a 1-2-3 combo. I agree with you. I'm pretty excited to see him come across. He's looked pretty good in over in Europe, and I have seen some highlights of some of his games that he's played, and I am really looking forward to him coming across. Now, Matt, it's the time of the show where we head to some of the questions from the listeners to this podcast. And once again, tremendous amount of questions. I'm going to head to Facebook first. And from Julio Torrios, he says, does Booker have any chance of putting up the value he did this year with a healthy Bledsoe? Is he a top 100 guy next season? We've both answered that in pretty big detail. So I'm going to say no, he's not going to put up the exact same value he did at the end of last season. Top 100, I think that's probably where he goes. Top 80 is pushing it to me.
Yeah, I think he'll be drafted inside the top 100, probably a couple of rounds too early. Might have a slow start of the season with Bledsoe and Knight, fingers crossed, fully healthy. But then come the second half, maybe past the trade deadline, if something does happen there with one of those two guys, I think he'll have a second stronger end of the season. So he'll finish inside the top 100. I don't think I would draft him there. Or if I do, I think it's more likely that he'll get drafted a round or two before where I'm willing to take him.
But it's also going to come back to drafting strategy, which we'll talk about more in the coming months, that once we head outside the top 80, and if you look back at your rosters from this season, you'll see that you've turned over 5 or 6 guys. So it's almost like just taking a stab. Hey, do I think this guy's got a potential chance to be a top 50 guy? Then if I have to get him at pick 80, then I will get him at pick 80, even though, 75% chance that he finishes worse than that. But the 20% chance makes it worth a go. Those last 5 or 6 picks are literally just, can this work? What's the upside here? Whereas early picks, you're going for stability. And I'd say probably last 5 picks or so is where you're going, where's my upside here? Eric Wagner has a question, which to me is pretty straightforward. Interesting to hear your opinion. I can keep PJ Tucker for another year at $11 with a $360 budget. Does he have any value? Matt?
He has minimal value, but for $11, I'd be rather spending that elsewhere. So I'd let him go and use that $11 elsewhere.
So your most budgets are $200. Standard auction budget is $200. So at $360, you scale that back, he's probably a $7 player in a $200 budget. And to me, he's a $1 player. So he's probably a $2 player or $3 player in that sort of a league. $11, if you can get better players. I'd rather take a gamble on $3 players and hope one of them pans out. Because as we talked about Tucker, the arrow is very, very clearly on the way down. I'm going to throw you a real softball here, Matt, in terms of a question. Barry Baker, the podcast question maker, has a question for us on Twitter. Who is going to get better, Booker or Goodwin?
Well, hopefully they're both going to get better, but if you want one, it's Devin Booker, and it's by a very long margin. So Devin Booker all the way. And I want to throw a question back to you, Josh, which I got by text message today, would you believe, the good old SMS.
Wow, okay.
How early are you taking Alex Len next season? And do you still think Chandler will start?
No to the second part. I don't think Chandler will start. And how early am I taking him? He falls probably outside the top 8 rounds, I think. It really depends how a lot of things fall, but if I had to pick him in round 7, I wouldn't feel horrible about it, but I think I'd want to take him after the first 8 rounds. I'd be happy taking him inside the top 100, though.
Yep. You would be?
Yeah, I'd be okay. I think this is a massive season for him coming up. I'd want to hear the talk from Watson moving forward and the way the roster rounds out, but I'm thinking that he is a fairly decent lock to be a top 100 player. And if I had to put money on it, I think that he ends up with a better ranking than what Devin Booker does.
Yep, that's fair.
Irv Dizzle says, Knight, Goodwin, a lot of Goodwin questions. Knight, Goodwin, Bledsoe, and Booker. Who am I prioritizing and why? Bledsoe is far and away the best player here. There is absolutely no doubt to me. He is a top 15 upside guy. It is him without a shadow of a doubt. I don't care if it's Standard League. I don't care if it's Dynasty. He's 26 years old. He is going to be a top 30 guy, top 20 guy, perhaps for the next four years. It's clearly him to me.
Clearly Bledsoe. Then was it Brandon Knight, I think, yeah. Second, Booker third, and who was the other guy?
Archie Goodwin. He's a long way behind.
Long, long way behind, yep.
And then Irv also says, Alex Len must own, well, we just talked about that. He also says, how will their draft picks affect their team? We talked about that. They're not bringing four rookies in. There is no chance they're bringing four rookies into this team. Danny Triella, I'm not sure how to judge his question. Question for the Suns review. Who's their future and who will be there in 3 to 5 years? Len and Booker, they'll both be there. I can't see any... They are the cornerstone of this team, plus pick four this year. They are the cornerstone of this team moving forward. Maybe Len is not quite as much of a lock to be the cornerstone as what I feel Booker is at this point, but I think that he is... I think he's a pretty decent chance to be there. You got anything else to add to that?
No, Len and Booker are definitely the future. As I said, this pick four and what they do with it will really determine the direction of this team. As will free agency. Do they throw money at a Nicholas Batum, an Al Horford, and try to get another guy to boost them straight back into the playoffs? Or do they go out and get another younger guy, say like a Harrison Barnes on the wing there to complement Alex Len and Devin Booker and really build a young core of guys 23 and under? So, yeah, we'll know a lot more in a month's time, but Len and the Booker for the next 3 to 5 years, and hopefully they're two big cornerstones of the Suns team.
Yeah, you'd have to think so. Now, we've got one more question involving Bogdan Bogdanovic, and it's from Matt, who's on Twitter, at Matt Fester. He says, where would Bogdan go in a dynasty rookie draft, including Saric as well? This is the second question. I don't know if it was Matt that had the question yesterday about Saric, who have got dynasty rookie drafts, including players who were drafted 3 years ago, which to me, they go in rookie drafts in the year they're drafted. But this is the second question I've had about including Bogdan and Saric in a rookie draft this season, which seems weird to me. Where would he go? Where does Bogdan fit in a draft alongside Ingram and Simmons and these sort of players?
Yeah, well, I haven't done as much draft research as I would have liked at this stage. I'll be doing that over the coming months, but I don't think he'd be going in the top five. We've got Ingram, Simmons, Bender, Dunn, and then one of Brown, Murray, Hield. I heard you say last night you'd have Saric at four behind Bender. Is that correct?
I think I had him. I can't remember. I think I had him behind Dunn as well. Yeah. But he's top five, yeah.
And then where are we going with Bogdanovic? I think because of his situation there with Bledsoe and Knight handling the ball and just so much usage going through those guys, then he'd be a little bit further down the pecking order, and in terms of his stats, that'll really impact what he does on the court.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's more of someone who is 10 at the earliest if you're talking rookies, but even then I'd probably go, like, I still do like him, but I think he probably goes a little bit I wouldn't pick him probably in the top 10 guys at this point, but he has, I'll tell you what, he's got balls, and he's not afraid to take a big shot. He is not afraid to be a guy who has the ball at the end of a game, and that could really, it could help him in terms of his role, because he's not a typical, or not typical is the wrong word, not the perceived European guy. Like, he's more of a super confident Mario Hezonja type than a wallflower wilting type of player that we've heard with a lot of European players previously. We also had a question now. I'm not sure how best to answer this one. Same question. He says, any player comparison? What sort of player comparison have you heard with him?
Well, Funny you should mention Hezonja, because I was thinking along that sort of lines, with a bit more confidence, long wingspan, 6'6", really good size, can run the floor, shoot the three, doesn't mind dunking as well. But yeah, Hezonja is pretty close. So I can't honestly think of another close comparison. Have you got anyone?
He's that sort of bigger ball handler type of player. Not quite Bradley Beal, but I think Bradley Beal, because I hate going just Euro for Euro, but that's where I'm leaning. And a lot of the comparisons I see, Marco Bellinelli. I think he's a very poor man's Bradley Beal in that sense. He can rebound a little bit. He can play a bit of defense. He can hit the three at a pretty good rate. He can score. He can pass. But a very poor man's version of Brad Beal.
Gordon?
Of who?
Eric Gordon?
Yeah, I don't hate that actually. I think Gordon's probably a better shooter, but he's a worse Eric Gordon, I think.
We've pumped him up, and then we've called him a worse Eric Gordon. That's good.
I do like him, but Eric Gordon's a player who suffers from, this guy is going to be something else. He's an all-star. He's going to be great. Oh, look how shit he is, but he's shit by comparison. But you still put him up against players in the league, and he's a lot better than a lot of them. Like Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, like it's not a comparison. Eric Gordon, TJ Warren, it's not a comparison. Yeah, Eric Gordon versus, I can't even think who else. Yeah, plenty of players in the NBA. Courtney Lee, Eric Gordon, it's clear. But he was a guy, this guy's going to be a top 20 player in the league, and it just didn't happen. And so we go, okay, look how bad he is. Oh, he's terrible. He's useless. He's crap. But he's not. He's like a 40% three-point shooter who can pass. He's got terrible defense, but offensively, he's a real handful.
Could we say he's a better Gerald Green?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, I don't mind. He's not quite the athlete Gerald Green is, because no one's the athlete that Gerald Green is. But yeah, he's that sort of guy who's just does a little bit of everything. The ball handling in a bigger frame is probably the way that, like, he's also a worse Chandler Parsons maybe as well. Just ability to run the ball from the small forward position. A bit of a smaller guy, but can run the ball as a point forward also as well. So we've chucked out a lot of names there. Probably none of them are accurate, but they're the sort of guys that, from what I understand from Bogdanovich and seeing him, that yes, he does have that sort of confidence, that three-point shooting and ball handling ability in a bigger frame. And go watch some highlights of him. He's pretty fun to watch. And the jerseys his team wear a little bit aggressive, with some pretty interesting vertical stripes on them, which look pretty weird out there. But that's European basketball for you, Matt. Anything we need to add on this team? They are your team, so you can have the final word on the Phoenix Suns.
No, like I said, it's going to be really, really interesting off-season. Three picks inside the first round, two inside the lottery, a lot of cap space, but everyone's got a lot of cap space with the increase. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing what they can do. They've had a couple of off seasons like that in the past couple of years, where we've had picks and had assets and had space, but haven't really capitalized. So this is a really big off season for the Suns, and yeah, we do have some picks in the bank as well for coming years. So onwards and upwards, hopefully.
Well, hopefully, as a Phoenix fan, that's correct. Now, Matt, you mentioned you haven't done a lot of work on the draft. You better start researching the NBA draft, because heading up just before the NBA draft, we're going to be having a massive NBA mock draft, first round picks with, at the moment, I think I've got 7 people locked into it. So we're going to be dividing teams amongst ourselves and mock drafting with quite a few people who are knowledgeable about basketball. So that's going to be a huge show at the end of June. So you better get your research on. And if you're looking for something great to look at, Matt, obviously there's the sites like Draft Express and NBADraft.net, but a nice PDF document, Kevin O'Connor. You can find him on Twitter at Kevin O'Connor NBA. He puts out, I think it's about an 80-page PDF guide each year. He does about 5 updates throughout the season. NBA Draft Prospects Guide is absolutely fantastic. I read a ton of it. I read lots of other sites, but Kevin does a great job. It's $10. You can send to him by PayPal, and it's worth every cent of that. So check out Kevin's stuff. This is an unsolicited plug. He doesn't know that I'm doing this. I've never spoken to Kevin aside from a few quick tweets back and forward, but he does a tremendous job with that draft guide, and I do encourage you. He writes for the Celtics, whatever the SB Nation Celtics side is over on SB Nation, Celtics Hub maybe. He writes over there and does draft coverage at SB Nation too, but he has a great guide, and I do encourage everyone, including you, Matt, to check it out.
I did purchase that last year, so yeah, I can... I can vouch for you there. So it was a good read.
$10. It's cheap as
any of those other guys who are doing that mock draft with us, that pick four will be on the table. If anyone during that draft wants to send me offers, it is open for trade.
So the people we've got locked in at the moment, yourself, me, Kyle, so the three basketball monster guys, got Mark Roberts in there as well. I've got Philip Roshman Rice at Reich from Hardwood Paroxysm is in there. I've got Matt Cianfroni from The Friendly Bounce is in there. Who else have I got locked in?
Dean
Vasich. Yes, he is in, one of the great listeners of this podcast. He's jumping in to take on the Celtics. I can't remember. I've got a couple other people in there as well, but we're working on a few other names for that big mock draft pod that's coming. Matt, we haven't spoken to you for a while on this podcast, so it's good to get you back talking Phoenix Suns, talking fantasy basketball. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs, but before you do that, remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SmanSports, so give us a follow over there. Always something happening on Twitter, and going to be big off season, so good to be back. And yeah, we'll be back on the podcast at some stage every now and then during the off season. And yeah, thanks Josh, and talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Great having you back on, Matt. Follow Matt on Twitter for all his basketball analysis and all his terrific puns. He's a big Twitter corny joke person. He's big on chucking those out there. You follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. And of course, keep up to date with Basketball Monster at Bask Monster. Hardwood Paroxysm, great podcast, great articles. Check out all the stuff over there. We are done. Tomorrow we're going to be doing the Los Angeles Lakers season in review, so stay tuned to that. And the best way to stay tuned to all these things is to subscribe, whether it's on YouTube, on iTunes, on Overcast, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, wherever. You know where the podcast is. Subscribe, leave reviews, thumbs up, all that sort of great stuff. We are done. Matt, one last time, thank you again.
Thanks, Josh.
No worries. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.